It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
These are people that, in my opinion, hate our country. If they don't like it here, they can leave.
Does it concern you that many people saw that tweet as racist and that white nationalist groups are finding common cause with you on that point?
It doesn't concern me because many people agree with me.
I encourage the American people and all of us in this room and beyond to not take the bait. We know this is who he is.
This is the agenda of white nationalists. No matter what the president says, this country belongs to you. And it belongs to everyone.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was a bit of a montage, a short telling of what's been happening the last few days. Happy to be back with you, by the way. The president tweeted basically over the weekend, so interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally come from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how? And then he went on to say how it is done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements. And, of course, he's talking about the four really leftist congresswomen whose voices we hear very loudly. The one that's probably not so familiar, she isn't to me, it's Ayanna Pressley. She's from Massachusetts, or Boston, I think. So she's a black representative. Of course, Ilhan Omar is Somalian. Rashida Tlaib is Palestinian, and Ocasio-Cortez is Puerto Rican. And, of course, now the backlash is he's being a racist. That is the mantra. He is a racist because it has nothing to do, of course, with their politics. It's just about their color. John Roberts did his part to help. Here's his report last night from Fox.
These are people that hate our country.
At an event to celebrate products made in America, President Trump today did not back down one inch from his weekend tweet in which he said of four Democratic congresswomen, why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how it's done.
As far as I'm concerned, if you hate our country, if you're not happy here, you can leave.
The tweet was aimed at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and Ilhan Omar. All are American citizens. Only Omar was born outside the United States.
This is the agenda of white nationalists. Whether it is happening in chat rooms or it's happening on national TV, and now it's reached the White House garden.
Even members of the president's own party condemned the tweets. Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio tweeting they were racist and he should apologize. And this from Republican Texas Congressman Will Hurd.
I think those tweets are racist and xenophobic.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt because I got a lot of clips I want to play. But you get the idea. And John goes on to lay it out. Of course, the president is a racist. It, of course, wouldn't have anything to do with the fact they are socialist / communist. And actually, Lindsey Graham is the one who calls them out as communists on another network, and the president responds to that. So Ilhan Omar is asked if she is a communist and if she does support al-Qaeda, because we remember that she had said that on 9/11, some people did something. Remember she said that? Ilhan Omar is, of course, anti-Semitic. I could go on and on with her comments, but let's listen to 15 because she's asked point blank if she supports Al-Qaeda and if she is a communist. Let's listen.
You might have noticed how when he said, go back to where you came from, there was an uproar through all of our communities, because every single person who's brown and black at some point in their life in this country heard that. Now, when he made the comment, I know that every single Muslim who has lived in this country and across the world has heard that comment. And so I will not dignify it with an answer, because I know that every single Islamophobe, every single person who is hateful, who is driven by an ideology of othering, as this president is, rejoices in us responding to that and us defending ourselves. I do not expect every time there is a white supremacist who attacks, or there is a white man who kills in a school or in a movie theater or in a mosque or in a synagogue, I don't expect my white community members to respond on whether they love that person or not. And so I think it is beyond time. It's beyond time to ask Muslims to condemn terrorists. We are no longer going to allow the dignification of such ridiculous statement.
Some of you have made comments that the president took issue with that were controversial.
All right. So Ilhan Omar, it must think we're really stupid, but I guess we kind of are, because she actually does support Al-Qaeda. She talked about the pride that you have about these, I don't know exactly her words, but she had pride. And of course, she really has not made any secret about how she feels about the Jews. And so the president weighed in on this in a press conference. John Roberts was the one you heard ask a question earlier. Let's hear what the president had to say. Clip 11.
They're very unhappy. I'm watching them. All they do is complain. So all I'm saying is, if they want to leave, they can leave, John. They can leave. I mean, I look at Omar. I don't know. I never met her. I hear the way she talks about Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has killed many Americans. She said you can hold your chest out. You can, when I think of America, when I think of Al-Qaeda, I can hold my chest out. When she talked about the World Trade Center being knocked down, some people, you remember the famous some people. These are people that, in my opinion, hate our country. Now, you can say what you want, but get a list of all of the statements they've made. And all I'm saying that if they're not happy here, they can leave. They can leave, and you know what? I'm sure that there'll be many people that won't miss them. But they have to love our country. They're Congress people, and I never used any names. But these are people, quiet. These are people that if they don't like it here, they can leave. And I don't know who's gonna miss them, but I guess some people will. One of them is polling at 8%. So when I hear people speaking about how wonderful Al-Qaeda is, when I hear people talking about some people with the World Trade Center, not some people, much more than some people.
All right, so the president's getting angry. And you know what? God bless him for that. I'm angry, too. Are you not angry? That somehow we have allowed people who actually hate this country to go into our Congress and try to undermine and dismantle the American, and then claim to be lovers of America all the while. It's just amazing. It's amazing. It's so twisted. But I want to go to this next clip because this ties into their response to this particular incident. You may or may not know that there was a bombing at a ICE facility over the weekend in Seattle. And you know that ICE was planning on doing raids, and you know about the demonstrations. I'm sure you've heard it in other news sources. And we're going to get to that in a second because Jessica Vaughn's going to join us. But what happened over the weekend is that a gentleman, 69-year-old Wilhelm von Spronson, was killed in a shootout. He was armed with a rifle, a satchel, a Molotov cocktails, and flares. He tried to detonate a propane bomb. I want you to hear the CNN report on this because I have something to say about this. So listen carefully. Let's listen to clip 16.
CNN correspondent Pola Sandoval has been following all the details here. Pola, when officers first arrived on scene, what did they find?
It was a very tense situation here, quite the chaotic situation as well. According to a spokesperson for the Tacoma Police Department, police were initially called early this morning to this man that you just described here that was essentially throwing Molotov cocktails at vehicles and even potentially at officers here. Officers then forced to open fire, shooting and killing the man. Now they are beginning their investigation here as those officers involved are on administrative leave, which is standard procedure anytime an officer has to use their firearm. Authorities now trying to find out exactly what the motive was. At this point, they have not said exactly who this person was, but of course, that is something that they're trying to answer right now. The medical examiner now will be performing an autopsy, but what police do say is this individual obviously showing signs that he was disturbed here. So far, based on what we're hearing from authorities on it, it's simply just timing when it comes to any possible connection with the controversy, obviously, and the expected ICE raids that are supposed to be carried out starting tomorrow. At this point, police have not established any sort of connection with that. So at this point, it seems like it could have just been timing, but certainly going to be something that we're going to be continuing to follow to see if that is perhaps a part of the motive here.
So we don't know the motive for why he was even there throwing Molotov cocktails.
Simply a disturbed individual who was creating the scene and sadly was shot and killed by
officers. We are going to be.
Oh, what a lie. What a lie. I'll tell you what we do know. The Seattle Times knew, and they printed it. I'm surprised they did. His name was Wilhelm von Spronson. He was arrested, by the way, I'm not sure what year it was, but it made headlines, when he wrapped his arms around a police officer's throat and shoulders in an apparent attempt to free another protester. He is of Vashon Island. He tossed lit objects in vehicles and buildings, causing one car fire and unsuccessfully trying to ignite a propane tape. I take. Again, this is in an ICE facility, but this is what we know. Deb Bartley, a friend of von Spronson's for about 20 years, described him as an anarchist, an anti-fascist. And she believes his attack on the detention center was intended to provoke a fatal conflict. By the way, he just wrote a manifesto. He just printed the manifesto. And Antifa, in response to his death, posted online. Oh, by the way, Andy, no. Remember the journalist that was beaten up by Antifa? And we talked about that a lot last week. He is still reporting, and he has video, actually, of Wilhelm at these protests. He's got a couple of shots of him that he records online. Wilhelm von Spronson. So now the Antifa in Seattle has posted, when our good friend and comrade, Wilhelm von Spronson took a stand against the fascist detention center, he became a martyr who gave his life to the struggle against fascism. All right, but CNN, we don't know the motive. He was just obviously a disturbed individual, and of course they said they would follow up, but they are not because he's printed this manifesto. No one's talking about it. But they're not the only ones. CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, MSNBC, none of them are talking about it. It wasn't on the Sunday shows, and you don't know about it probably, that a member of Antifa was the one who tried to kill people at that ICE detention center over the weekend. And so I just wanted to make sure that you were fully informed about that. Ilhan Omar was asked about that. She was asked about how she felt about that. In fact, let's play just a little bit of that clip. Clip 9.
The Antifa attack in Washington over the weekend. It's easy to condemn terrorism. Will you condemn it?
Is it fear?
Antifa firebombed a facility in Tacoma over the weekend. It's an ICE facility. Will you condemn them for that? I mean, firebombing a concentration camp is kind of a laudable thing. If it actually is a concentration camp, you must be happy that they did it, no?
All right, and it goes on and on. Of course, she refuses. It's a very up-close thing. She can't miss the question, and she refuses to comment. Ilhan Omar, that woman who just loves America and now refuses to say if she's communist or not, and even if she loves Al-Qaeda, because how dare they ask us poor Muslim mistreated people about whether we are in concert with the terrorists. How dare they ask us? And the president is saying, if you don't like it, go back to your country. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of difficulty in the world. But as the Word of God says, if your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Erica Wright, Acting Director of the Women's Bureau. She oversees the identification, research, and analysis of topics, policies, programs, and education that affect women in the workplace. Philippians 4:13 reminds us of the ability to strive and achieve, an ability we receive from the Lord. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to lift up and guide Erica Wright as she helps working women in the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Deciphering the president's tweets. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump finally had enough of the hateful rhetoric spewing from progressive members of the Democrat Party. They have denigrated America as well as the nation of Israel. Now, I'm not going to repeat the president's tweets, but I sincerely disagree that what he wrote was racist. He was right to call out a lawmaker who said she was ashamed of our nation, called the American people unjust. When protesters tore down the American flag and raised the Mexican flag in Colorado, not a single Democrat condemned the desecration, not one. A few days ago, I too suggested if Congresswoman Omar or any other immigrant is unhappy with the nation, they should feel free to move someplace else. I believe the exact words I used were, "Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you." I stand by every word. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
There's a tremendous amount of fear in our city. So what we're trying to do is lower the fear by giving them information, and the information is empowering them.
Let me be clear. We do not assist with immigration enforcement.
We have been and will be and will continue to be a sanctuary city. We will continue to stand behind our immigrant communities.
There's anxiety that's being created, not just in our immigrant community, but with anyone who has passion, compassion, and concern for human beings.
All right, so that was a series of mayors. It started out with the mayor of Chicago and moved to others talking about their, you know, they're not going to cooperate with ICE on these raids. They're not going to cooperate. They're sanctuary cities. And I've asked Jessica Vaughn to join us this morning. Jessica is the director of policy studies for the Center for Immigration Studies. You know them through Mark Kerkorian, who is often our guest. And Jessica is a powerhouse on this. She's been our guest before. I'm glad to have her back. Hi, Jessica. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Glad to be with you.
It's good to have you. All right, so I'm going to jump right into it, Jessica, because there's so much to talk about. I want to know what you think. I know that in terms of the sanctuary cities, we actually got some good news in the last couple of days from the Ninth Circuit. Can you just explain that?
Yes, very reassuring news, even coming from the Ninth Circuit. An appeals court found that it is perfectly reasonable for the Department of Justice to give the benefits in awarding grants to jurisdictions that are cooperating with ICE, and that they can sort of downgrade the applications of sanctuaries in considering who will get federal law enforcement funding. So this is an endorsement of President Trump's move to create consequences for sanctuary jurisdictions that hinder immigration enforcement. They should not get federal funding at all to subsidize their disastrous policies.
So that's very interesting, and that's really good news, and we have so little of it, I wanted to make sure you got that in.
it's true.
I want to ask you, because the citizenship question on the census is, I hear people saying a lot of different things, and I really would like to know, Jessica, if you think the president made a good decision to finally give up on the question on the census and to say that other agencies can share citizenship data with census officials, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that he was in a tough position. It's important that we know how many citizens we have in the country and generally where they are located. And he was facing a tough court challenge and also up against a deadline to get the forms printed and out the door so that they, you know, we can have the census next year. So these other ways of finding information, I think, are not going to be as good as the simple task of asking people on the census. But the advantage of doing it this way is it probably will give us a sense of where not just non-citizens, but illegal aliens are living in our country, because they're going to be looking at things like Social Security number issuances, work authorization, who's filing tax returns, with potentially identity fraud, you know, using the identity of a citizen to get the job and then asking for the tax credits, you know, with your information as an illegal alien. So, you know, I think that it's less ideal than the census, but the president is right to try to get a better handle on what the situation is and where the problems may be.
Before you joined us this morning, I spent some time on the Antifa activist who tried to burn down an ICE facility and tried to bomb it, took a gun, and was ended up being killed. And the fact that it was not reported by the mainstream media at all, Jessica. And I want to also add to that a story about in Aurora, Colorado, that these illegal alien protesters in the protest against the ICE raids that were to take place over the weekend ripped down the American flag at an ICE facility in Aurora and raised the Mexican flag. I know you have lots to say about what's happened over the weekend there and the ICE raids, and I just want to turn you loose. Tell us what's going on here.
Yes, these incidents are really horrifying and really show us how extreme the rhetoric and hysteria has been whipped up by opponents of immigration enforcement. ICE was talking about doing what should be relatively routine operations of initiating action against people who were allowed into this country on the basis of an asylum application and who didn't comply with the very generous due process we gave them and who have now skipped out on their hearings, were ordered removed by a judge, have exhausted all appeals, and still haven't gone home. And so they were going out to start, you know, fulfilling the removal orders of the judges and sending people home. And this, what should be, as I said, routine, non-controversial immigration enforcement, turned into this wave of hysteria and ultimately violence against facilities that are used by ICE and against the people who work in them. We have a private contractor who runs a detention facility for ICE in Aurora, Colorado, and there's a facility in Washington also that both were subjected to violent protests. In the facility in Washington, there was a man who's associated with this Antifa militant group that had explosives and was going to set propane tanks on fire in what seems like very clearly an effort to try to kill people working at this immigration detention facility. And by the way, probably would have harmed the people who are being held in that facility as well. And, you know, who knows who else would have been subjected to this violence. And that's really alarming. ICE managers and leaders are really concerned about the potential for violence against these officers who put their lives on the line every day to go out and arrest mainly criminals, by the way. So I think that's why we haven't seen so many high-profile arrests in this operation against the people who've been ordered removed. It's a very tense situation for ICE now, and they need to be careful. I think first we need to see some of this hysteria be tamped down. Most Americans want immigration laws enforced. They're enforced for very good reasons, one being so that we can have a legal immigration system with some integrity. And I think legal immigrants also want to see immigration laws enforced and don't appreciate this violence against our democratic institutions. In the case in Colorado, the protesters took down a Blue Lives Matter flag, which is intended to salute the sacrifices and dangers faced by our law enforcement officers, and instead painted over it with "Abolish ICE" graffiti, which is I think offensive to most everyone. And you know, I just worry about this expression of hostility to not only, you know, the political differences over immigration laws, but hostility to the men and women of these agencies who do this difficult job on behalf of our country, our sovereignty, and our legal immigration system.
You know, this is going to be an uncomfortable question, but I have to ask you, Jessica, because ICE, of course, attempted these raids a couple of weeks ago. And my understanding is the accusation and probably the likelihood of the acting Secretary of the Homeland Security, Kevin McAleenan, is that he probably likely leaked the fact that ICE was going to commit to do those raids. And yet nothing has happened to him. Can you comment on that?
Yes, this is very puzzling. Kevin McAleenan, who is now the acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, has been a controversial figure for a number of years. He was originally a commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, the agency that oversees both our legal ports of entry and the Border Patrol. And it was on his watch, really, that we have seen this surge of illegal migrants at the border and this abuse of our asylum system happening, with the catch-and-release policy turning loose hundreds of thousands of illegal arrivals loose into American communities to stay indefinitely, knowing that they were not going to comply with their hearings and so on, that they weren't even interested in making asylum applications. All of this happened on his watch, and yet he was elevated to the position of acting secretary and seems to want the job permanently. But a lot of insiders at high levels within these enforcement agencies have been very uncomfortable with his role and felt that he has not been a real team player in trying to address the problem. He just keeps saying, well, Congress has to do something about it. Congress has to fix our laws, ignoring his responsibility as running these agencies to use his authorities. And so it looks like the president has, you know, sort of had to get others to do the job that McAleenan really should be doing, and that's try to, you know, take steps to stop this problem.
You know,
and
Jessica,
that's what we're now seeing. I don't know what that means for his fate and his job, but he's still only acting.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And, I think there's nothing more discouraging. At least I'll say for myself, it's one thing to be at odds with AOC and Ilhan Omar, and the rest of the gang over this issue and Nancy Pelosi. But it's a very different thing when inside the camp, a Trump nominee is undermining and nothing is done. You want to see him just fired. You want to see him replaced. That would encourage the American people, but I don't need to tell you that. Jessica, you're going to testify on at Congress this morning. Just say a word about that, then we're going to say goodbye to you.
Sure. The Democrats in the House have called a hearing to complain about measures the Trump administration has taken to improve the way that visas and green cards are given out, to improve the screening that's done and the processing to reduce the backlog. And they are trying to mischaracterize these improvements as some kind of war on immigrants, which is nonsense. So that's what we're going to be talking today. I'm going to be explaining how now we have better ways to detect fraud in our process and other modernization of these important agencies. But the Democrats want to use this just as a cudgel against Trump and as I said, mischaracterize this as offensive to immigrants. And so it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
Yes, absolutely. Well, God bless you, Jessica, and just we pray that he gives you the right words and clear thinking. You have them naturally, but when his secret sauce is applied, it's more powerful. So we pray that for you. And so thank you for everything that you do on behalf of the country, Jessica, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Likewise. Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome. All right. So really, honestly, she is a national treasure. Jessica has she's a walking encyclopedia. And Center for Immigration Studies, of course, which is headed by Mark Kerkorian, who's a very good friend, and he's on often. By the way, Mark's out of the country, but Jessica is like an able substitute for Mark. She is a terrific, just has terrific knowledge. So I'm grateful to have her even for a few minutes. She has to get on her way to testify. I wanted to say a few words. We talked about that desecration of the American flag in Colorado, and Michelle Malkin kind of weighed in on that because, you know, you may not know, but Michelle lives in Colorado now. And this is what she said about that. She said, ethnic grievance mongers raised the Mexican flag over the American flag flying upside down at Montebello High School in Southern California. The flag wars quickly spread to Florida, Texas, Arizona, and now my adopted home state of Colorado. At the time I wrote, I predict this stunt will be the nail in the coffin of any guest worker amnesty plan on the table in Washington. I was right. And then she talks about how the Bush amnesty plan crashed in flames. And I was in D.C. when that happened, by the way, working very hard to make it crash. So Michelle goes on to say, PR strategists for the sovereignty saboteurs have tried to clean up their act and dress up their endless amnesty campaigns in red, white, and blue ever since they made that blunder. They temporarily put down their foreign flags, stopped wearing their commie Che Guevara t-shirts, and cloaked their radical Reconquista aspirations in the less divisive rhetoric of reform, opportunity, and dreamers. But they just can't help themselves. They can never hide their true colors. And the Mexican flag raising in Aurora this past weekend proved it. Once again, I predict doom for the border erasers. They've crossed a line that Americans have not, cannot, and will not tolerate. Well, we'll see. I hope she's right about that because it really is an all-out war, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's coming back, certainly. I haven't even had time to talk about this, but we have members, again, of the Evangelical Church. I think of comments by Russell Moore lately talking about how horrible it is to separate children at the border. Now, I'm telling you, Russell Moore knows better than that. He knows he is not writing out of ignorance. I think a lot of these pastors or theologians are writing really out of ignorance because they're not informed. They're watching the news and they're regurgitating what they're hearing every morning on whatever their choice of news is. But Russell's not exempt from that. Russell is in D.C. Russell, he knows exactly what's going on, and I view him as a man who is willingly, willfully, for whatever purpose, trying to mislead Christians everywhere, and especially the Southern Baptist Convention. I have a problem with that, because we have a serious problem on our border. And what they want to do is make it about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is immoral. He's a misogynist. He's a racist. And so we can't protect the border. That's the reason, you see, because Donald Trump, by the way, he's xenophobic. He's racist. He hates immigrants. And so therefore, we have to let everyone in for any reason. It doesn't matter if we've got crime. By the way, I've got a story right here of an illegal immigrant responsible for killing a father of two in Illinois just a few days ago. But that doesn't matter, you see, because we have to protect whatever we have to protect. You might want to ask Russell Moore yourself, what is your motivation? What are you trying to get from this? And where are your loyalties? And what is the position of a Christian on this about your own family? Sadie Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The puppet master behind AOC is her chief of staff, Saikat Chakrabarty. He rarely gives interviews, but he's constantly worn a T-shirt bearing the face of Subhash Chandra Bose in the few interviews he's done. This wardrobe choice is telling. Subhash Chandra Bose was the Prime Minister of India, 1943 to 1945. He was an ally of Adolf Hitler and placed his Free India Legion under SS command. Bose teamed with the Japanese in 1943 and admired Stalin's USSR. Chakrabarty's hero was an ally of the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany, and he's AOC's chief of staff.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Does God exist? Is the Bible true? Does truth exist?
When people say there is no truth, I simply ask them this question. Is that true?
Join us this weekend for Cross-Examined with Frank Turek, author of the bestseller, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
I actually think it takes more faith not to believe in the truthfulness of the Bible than it does to believe in the Bible.
Cross-Examined with apologist Frank Turek, Saturday morning at 9 Central and Sunday afternoon at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
American Family Coffee.
Yum. Delicious.
I drink a lot of it.
I buy the big bag, too. I don't buy the little one. I big like the 5-pound bag. We can't really find anything in our local grocery stores that compare to American Family Coffee.
American Family Coffee. Get yours today at afastore.net.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Dads are sometimes labeled as lazy cowchounds, but it turns out they don't deserve to be. Researcher Robert Verbruggen looked at data surveys which track how we as Americans spend our days. Contrary to what many people think, Verbruggen found that adding up paid work, housework, childcare, and even shopping, dads do about 59 hours of work per week, while moms do about 55. Even when mom and dad both work outside the home, dads still work slightly more. Men do less work at home, but more on the job. Verbruggen concludes, we should stop whining about dads as a group not doing their share of the work their families depend upon, because that's not true. And don't forget, you can pick up my book on fatherhood, The Boy to Man Book, at afastore.net, afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affley with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo convenes a massive ministerial to advance religious freedom. To succeed in that vital mission, the participants will have to address two big challenges. First, practical steps that actually advance religious freedom must be adopted. The place to start is by holding accountable those who persecute Christians and other believers, and by imposing real costs for their crimes against humanity. The same should apply to those who enable such persecution by lobbying for or otherwise legitimating regimes that persecute religious minorities. Second, the ministerial must repudiate those who assert that freely practicing their faith entitles them to deny that right to others. Unfortunately, this task will be complicated by the presence there of Muslim Brotherhood operatives and other Sharia supremacists who claim divine authority to compel the submission of every other religion's adherents. That's not religious freedom. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Mississippi gubernatorial candidate Robert Foster has ignited a controversy. It started when Larrison Campbell, a politics reporter for Mississippi Today, asked to follow him on the campaign trail.
We wanted to show, you know, our readers not only like what it's like to be on the campaign trail, but sort of like the candidate's ideas, goals for Mississippi through the lens of how they're interacting with people, how they're campaigning, how they're selling their message.
Foster told her she could only shadow him if she brought a male colleague. He says he didn't want people to get the wrong idea, seeing him alone with a woman who wasn't his wife.
And they're going to look at a glimpse of somebody passing in a car or sitting together at a restaurant, eating alone with someone, and they're not always going to. They're going to make assumptions, and that's the way people are, and I don't want to put myself in a position to be assumed that I'm doing something I shouldn't be that's inappropriate.
Foster says it's part of his religious beliefs, but he's also worried about political perceptions.
It's all a possibility that my political opponents could try to exploit something against me if they wanted to, if they felt threatened in the race, that they might need an extra bump in the polls or knock me down a few points.
Campbell says she's interviewed Foster several times before. No problems. She calls his decision now sexist.
A woman only looks improper in this context if you view her as a sexual being first and as a reporter second. I was trying to do my job, and they sexualized me.
I didn't mean it in that way at all. It's just a policy that I've always had in my personal business, and I continue to have in my political life and in personal life as well, that I'm not alone with another female that's not my wife.
Campbell hopes it sparks a conversation about the discrimination women face in the workforce, including in politics. Foster says, despite criticism, he believes most Mississippians would agree with him.
All right, that's a report from last week. This is not a new story. It's about a week old, actually, but perhaps you haven't heard it yet. Mississippi State Representative Robert Foster is under attack, and you can let me just give you an idea of what's being written about him. USA Today's headline read, Mississippi GOP gubernatorial candidate denied reporter access because she's a woman. Slate wrote, Mississippi gubernatorial candidate refuses reporter access because she's a woman. Mediaite, GOP gubernatorial candidate bars reporter from accessing campaign because she's a woman. And, of course, it goes on and on and on with other outlets. Robert Foster is joining us this morning. Again, he's a state rep in the state of Mississippi, and he is running for governor of that state. Robert, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right, I want to know, how many interviews have you done on this since this story broke?
I've lost count. Quite a few, actually.
Did you ever expect, when you basically said to Larison Campbell through your media person that she could, correct me if I'm wrong, you said she could come on the trip of the 14-hour shadowing, but she needed to bring, there needed to be another a man in the car with the two of you.
Yeah, so that's really the what the media is not leaving, they're not telling the whole story. They say I denied her access, which is not true at all. I've done multiple interviews with her in other more professional settings, but this was a situation where she wanted to do a ride-along in the vehicle, and it was going to be a 14-15-hour day from early morning till very late in the evening after the last campaign stop. And I've got a small campaign staff up until this point. We have, you know, we haven't even gotten to the primary yet, and my campaign director sometimes has to part ways and go to other events or meet me. You know, has to cover for me at one event. I do one event, we meet back up later. And so there was over a 14-15-hour day, a very high probability that, you know, we may have to part ways and I would be alone with Ms. Campbell in the vehicle for, you know, an extended period of time. And any amount of time would still not, in my opinion, be professional. And so I asked for her to bring a male colleague along with her because they had sent a male colleague to do the interviews, the ride-along interviews with the other two male Republican governor's candidates. And that's what I thought that the same reporter was going to be doing my ride-along interview originally. And then they called right before the interview, the week up, just a few days before, and it was changed to Ms. Campbell. And so that, you know, was obviously a different scenario.
Did you have any idea, honestly, that there would be this kind of firestorm, or did this catch you by surprise?
It did. You know, many professionals, men and women, both have practiced this all for beginning of time. And people that I know now all over the world have been reaching out to me saying, you know, it's not only a practice that they practice, but it's part of their company's policy, or even some government agencies have these same policies. And it's just baffling to me that now the radical left seems to be finding this to be their next issue. And it's really a very, very bad scenario if we allow them to get their way on this, because if a woman were to tell a man, I don't want you riding alone with me in a vehicle for 14 or 15 hours, no one would even be having a conversation about that. That would just be perceived as she has a right to ask that request. But for a man to say that and then be vilified as sexist, it puts men in a very, very bad situation moving forward if they're either going to be vilified as sexist and be browbeat down into allowing that to take place, then from there on, they're always for the next 14 or 15, you know, for the rest of their lives at the mercy of that woman coming back and saying that they made an assault against them and it's their word versus he said, she said. And so I think it's just a professional practice that, you know, I've always practiced this because of my faith and the vow I had to my wife. But I also think it's a professional practice that most people should consider putting into their professional lives going forward because of the fact that you don't want to put yourself in a position of having a he said, she said moment. You always should have someone there to witness. And that's just the way I believe that people should be professional and do that.
Yes, you know, interestingly enough, you may or may not know that there was an online survey of February of 2018 after the Me Too movement started, and it found that 60% of male managers said that they were uncomfortable mentoring, socializing with, or working alone with women in the workplace. And I think, Robert, actually, if this had happened to you, like, say, when Vice President Pence declared that he wouldn't eat, you know, a meal with a woman, without his wife being present. He got a lot of criticism. I actually think because of the Me Too movement, there are more people who have sympathy with your position. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, because I think what the Me Too movement did is it brought to light, for those that are not, you know, believers in Christianity and don't have the faith principle and reason for not wanting to put themselves into the perception of doing something that they shouldn't be. But setting that aside, even on the professional side, it really brought to light the scenario that men are placed in if they don't act in this manner, having someone around and or having the door open, if they're having a private conversation in business. There's nothing wrong with just keeping the door open to your office or having a glass door.
Oh, it's smart.
You know, or something of that nature, so that there's just always some, you know, check and balance there.
Well, especially if we're going to accept the mantra that women should always be believed, and we have a lot of women making, in my view, a lot of careless and false accusations, and also create, you know, attributing sexual misbehavior to them, sometimes some very innocent things. And so I think men have to protect themselves as you are doing. But let's go back to kind of the heart of this, Robert. As a Christian, let me just say, I had the privilege of, I'm not saying I was bosom buddies, but I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Billy Graham a number of times. He was, honestly, if I ever had a hero, and I've had very few, really. I have a lot of people I respect, but I love Dr. Graham. I grew up listening to him preach, and when I got to interview him a couple of times, I was thrilled. And let me just say that one of the things that people might not know, people that are younger, is that there were a series of scandals in the evangelical world, sexual scandals, whether it was Jim Baker or Jimmy Swaggart or fill in the blank, and they continue. Pastors having affairs with church members, all kinds of kind of scandals that have been coming up in the news, and that's not old. It's as old as time, these sexual scandals. But one person who stood above that was Billy Graham. There was never a hint of scandal in regard to his behavior, and there was a reason for that. And Robert, I bet you know about this. I'm going to just ask you what you know about what Billy Graham did to sort of take care in his own life. You know about that story?
Well, I don't know all the details except that, you know, the Billy Graham rule has been around for a long time, and I haven't researched, you know, like you have, obviously, the details behind it. But I know that the Billy Graham rule has been something that's been passed down to me from generations to never put yourself in a position of being perceived as doing something that's inappropriate. And part of that, and what he lived and what I've lived and what Vice President Mike Pence lived, is to just not put yourself in a position of being alone with another woman that is not your wife in a confined, you know, behind closed doors or in a vehicle riding, situations like that, so that there's never any kind of perception, and that's what's so important, is sometimes perception can be reality in this world. And
yes, exactly. Well, let me tell you, because this is actually cool. In 1948, when Dr. Graham began his ministry, and I think it was Cliff Barrows, and I don't know if George Beverly Shea was with him yet, but there were four of them, and they made a pact, and they developed what they just four rules of conduct for their team, and it included how they viewed and how they handled time spent with women. It had to do with their financial, how they handled their money, and two other areas, and that's what they swore to each other, and that's what they maintained all of those years. Robert, so this is something that you're practicing. Let me ask you something before we run out of time here. You've been a state rep in Mississippi. How long?
4 years.
How many?
Four years.
4 years. All right. So let me just ask you, what's the proudest thing you can share about your 4 years in the Mississippi legislature?
The proudest thing in the legislature for me was, and I'll never get credit in the media for this, but, you know, to God be the glory for it, that I helped push through the heartbeat legislation, abortion ban bill in the Mississippi legislature. I personally whipped the votes on the House side and pushed it through in an election year when people were really wanting to walk away and not push it that year. And last year we got that passed and the governor signed it into law. And there's a lot of us that would like to just outright ban abortion, but that was a big step in the right direction, and that's the proudest thing that I won't even have my name on, but I know I was a part of it. So.
Well, let's see, you know what? Who was it that Reagan, I think it was Reagan, who said that a lot of things can get accomplished in government if nobody worries about who gets the credit? So this is
that's a great example
of that. All right, so you want to be governor, and how would you like to, you know, Mississippi circumstances. What would you do, Robert? And just in a couple of minutes here, why do you want to be governor?
Well, because I have an experience in business. The last 14 years, I've been running and building up a business, and I'm the only one that's running for governor that can say that. The others have just got experiences in politics that are different than my experiences in life, and I look at things so much different. And there's two really big things since we only have a short period of time. One is our educational system and the public school system. I want to get back to putting VoTech and CareerTech as the main focus in that system again, because everybody's not meant to go to college, and we have to have other opportunities and skilled labor for the bulk of our children that need other options. And then the second thing that I would like to do is to completely restructure Mississippi's tax structure, because we have one of the worst ranked tax structures in the United States of America for business and industry. We overtax our working class and our small business owners. We're ranked 31 of 50, 50 being the most taxed in the nation. So we're down in the bottom 20, one of the most taxed in the whole country. And I want to restructure it to be much more like Tennessee, Texas, and Florida system, where they're all ranked in the top 20, where we would completely repeal our personal income tax and move to a straight sales and use tax-based system where everybody pays their fair share as they buy. The more you buy, the more you pay. And I think that's just the way it should be.
All right, 30 seconds. I thought Christian politicians only cared about abortion and gay marriage. You're off the rails, Robert. I'm kidding.
I have very depth in policy, and I have a big plan. It's all laid out on my website, governor.ms.
You know that was tongue-in-cheek. Of course that's not true, because we are called to address, you know, the world in a biblical view. Robert Foster, who's running for governor for the state of Mississippi, hope to speak to you again, Robert. And thank God for your stand on this and your steadfastness. And so just hang in there. We need men that are steadfast in politics. They are far and few between, and we need somebody just like you. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.